Chapter 29, Back on Track. For a long time after my belt promotion in Florida, I didn't compete in more than a few tournaments. Looking back, it is obvious to me, albeit still difficult to admit, that I was afraid. The race to become the best as fast as possible was fully on between the different little gyms around the country. With my shiny and rare purple belt, and as head of one of the few teams, expectations for my performance were high, at least inside my head. I competed once as a purple belt, and while decisively winning 5 matches by Kimura, I lost one to the same technique. That loss haunted me, and I stumbled under the pressure. I knew the right thing would be to keep stepping onto the mat, win or lose, and grow from the experiences. But I didn't do it, and there was no one to push me away from the easy decision to just say no. I lost the interest in competing, but deep inside myself, I knew that I had always liked it. I have never had a competitive fire inside of me, or an urge to win. But I liked the feeling of making things from training work against an opponent, of pulling off that takedown or submission and feeling the rush that comes along with it. It had all stopped at one point. There were a lot of eyes on me. Was I really good enough to run my own gym? If I had just been a regular student under some instructor, it would probably have been different. Then the responsibility would not have been on my own shoulders and name, but on someone else's. Most likely, it was all just inside my own head and not real. I had gotten a herniated disc in my back from a heavy deadlift, and it kept me from doing weight training and rolling too hard. I used it as a reason to stop competing. It was pretty legitimate, since I really couldn't train as hard as I wanted to prepare for competitions. Cardio training was completely out of the question. On top of that, I just didn't feel like a competitor. But in reality, I would have gotten a lot better if I just jumped onto the mat anyways and did the best with what I had. No one is ever 100% when they compete anyways. I admired competitors and still do. Those who put everything on the line, live out all their emotions on the mats, face their fears, and conquer them. I presumed I didn't have it in me to become one of those. What I didn't see at that point was that I missed out on a lot of opportunities to do exactly that, to grow and push myself. I might have dodged a lot of losses, but I also missed out on a lot of wins. The experience, no matter the result, is worth way more than giving in to your natural fear of failing. I should have done it. I broke up with the Straight Blast gym after some financial issues with Matt. I was nervous about standing on my own 2 feet without an organization of people behind me to help me anymore. I had learned a lot of good and bad lessons about life and training from them. Where would I get my inspiration now? Luckily, I quickly realized that as one door closes, 100 new ones open. That saying had never been more true and relevant in my life. Before the breakup, my realm of training pretty much existed inside a semi-closed bubble of that one organization. Not that they didn't allow me to train anywhere else. It just felt natural not to do it. As I suddenly stood on my own 2 feet, I realized that there was a whole world outside of it. I got in touch with tons of people who were just as passionate about training as me, people I would otherwise have been unlikely to meet. I traveled around the United States and backpacked in Thailand, and everywhere I went, I found cool people to train with in cool gyms. I collected little bits of inspiration or ideas from people I met that shaped me into the athlete, teacher, and person I wanted to become. I took note of the good things from the good guys and the bad things from the bad guys. The jiu-jitsu community seemed like an endless resource of friendships and experiences, and I had only just scratched the surface. It made no sense to limit myself to only training with a certain team or group of people when everyone everywhere could potentially be my new favorite training partner. That's when I decided that I would stay unaffiliated for the rest of my training life. While being a free spirit and training with everyone was nice, I still somewhat lacked a source of inspiration, some one person who could guide me and show me and give me some direction. In many senses, I just trained a little bit here and there and worked a little bit on everything. No one pushed me. No one told me what might be a good idea or not. A young Brazilian black belt, Hobson, had moved to a city in Sweden about an hour away from Copenhagen. He was always a referee at the many competitions I took my kids to, and he saw the development in the little team over the years. We got along really well, and eventually I invited him to come and teach a bit in my gym. His game was quite different than mine. I always had a heavy emphasis on conceptually understanding the core mechanics of the game, whereas Hobson had a more traditional, technique-based approach. He was always smiling and having fun during training, and got along really well with the kids in my gym. He was also an extremely passionate competitor, signing up for every single competition and putting everything on the line. I wasn't interested in becoming an affiliate with all the politics, gi patches, and business that follow along with it. In my opinion, affiliations, in most cases, come down to business. Small gyms will affiliate themselves with some big team in order to have a perception of legitimacy of their training. That comes through external validation, which is embodied in our sport as colored belts. Would there be any affiliations if belts didn't exist? I'm not sure there would. Imagine the same system of affiliations, teams, and rankings for, let's say, tennis or swimming. It makes no sense. The really evil side of affiliation, though, is the fear that drives someone to tell their students where they're allowed to train. Someone I know traveled around South America for months to train and was told by his teacher when he got home that he was never allowed to do that again. Only training within the organization's own academies was allowed. At the end of the day, we're all just grown-ups who like to wrestle. Why should we not be allowed to do that with anyone we want? Especially when we pay for it, not the other way around. There was no money involved, no contracts, no obligations, and no rules about not training with certain people. In my opinion, friendship and training is the only affiliation that makes sense to me, and that was exactly what I found with Hobson. It was a big class I arrived at on a dark December evening in 2009. The mat was packed to the limit. Hobson had given out 4 new purple belts to the guys, and I couldn't be more proud of what they had all achieved. We were lined up by the wall, waiting for his command to finish the class as he took out a brown belt from his bag. Everyone started cheering and clapping as he gave me a hug and changed my belt. It had been more than 4 years since I got my purple belt in Florida, and at some points along the way, I had wondered if I would ever get to the next belt level because no one seemed to have the same view on training affiliations as I did. I was never going to sell my soul just to get a promotion. Hobson had become the friend and inspiration that I had been looking for. I felt in a hurry to start competing again. I had postponed it for way too long, and now was the time to get going. The black belt was visible somewhere far away on the horizon, and I didn't want to be one of those guys who stopped competing at blue belt and never tested himself again. I told some of the guys on the team that I had decided to compete throughout my brown belt. I could already feel a knot tie in my stomach. I knew that the only way to get rid of it was to jump straight into the deep water and get going. Just like with surfing, my fear of the ocean would only grow bigger if I stayed on land. I had to break free of the vicious circle before it was too late. I signed up for the first competition I could find, a 16-man submission wrestling tournament in Germany. I was nervous and tried to find my routine of warming up and getting in the right mood. It worked out pretty well, and I won 5 matches by heel hook, taking home a big trophy. It took a few competitions and losses before I really felt comfortable about being back on the mat. I had pulled myself together, and the snowball had started to roll. I had done mostly no-gi competitions, and my first win with the gi came almost a year after getting my brown belt. I felt the pressure, but I was not nervous as I walked in onto the mat. 30 or so of my students were watching, half of them from my kids team. I pulled guard, swept, passed, passed again, mounded, cross choke, he tapped. The feeling of winning in my belt division was nice. It took a lot of pressure off me. I had just proved to myself that all the thoughts I had produced in my head about not being able to handle myself at high level were just crap. I did fine, and from there on, there was only one way to get even better. Keep going. The confidence coming from constantly challenging myself in competition was incomparable. Facing your fears and ego are such healthy things, and I regretted now that I hadn't kept doing it. A few knee problems kept me away at times, but I still had 14 matches in my first year as brown belt, and it made a world of difference to my jiu-jitsu. For the first time, I started to believe that I could one day be at a genuine black belt level. Not just someone who trained for more than 10 years and had been teaching a lot, but someone who had the performance level in sparring and competition to match it. I was still looking inside myself to try and find a will to win, to accomplish. It wasn't there. I had no urge to win. For a long time, I had concluded that in order to compete, I had to be a competitor. I had to feel like a competitor inside, to have that personality. That's what everyone else who competed seemed to have anyways. I was different. I only had an interest in using competition as an analytical tool to fuel my training and teaching. In time, I finally concluded that it was a perfectly fine approach to competition. When I let go of that expectation of being a competitive guy in order to compete, everything got much easier. I never felt much joy or sadness when I won or lost a match, but would immediately go home and analyze the result. It was a tool to become the best possible athlete and teacher I could be. There really is no secret to becoming a good competitor. You just need to do it and do it a lot. It's that simple. I finally felt like I was on the right track. I had a clear direction that I was heading towards for myself, my gym, and my students. To a large extent, Hobson had given me the push I needed to really start testing myself in competition on a regular basis and understand the importance of doing it as a coach and role model. I had made a decision to stop teaching my weekly MMA class and focus purely on jiu-jitsu. Carson did the opposite, quitting his jiu-jitsu classes and quickly developing into a high-level professional MMA coach. We had been running around in little circles for a while, but now each set our directions and were both racing down the road full speed. The gym was growing and growing. We were always looking into the horizon at the point, somewhere in the future, where we could finally put a stamp on the project, determining that it was a real success. I had arranged lots of grappling competitions and even had my take on the big MMA shows with 4 successful events. Down the road, I decided to stop all of that and focus my energy on making my gym a success instead. The definition of success was difficult. Our first goal was to be able to make a full-time living out of martial arts. That succeeded for me in 2005, and Carson the year after. Quitting our regular jobs were milestones in the gym's development, as we could then dedicate all our time to training and expanding the gym. The business can always grow bigger and have a bigger profit, but making more money is not necessarily what makes it a success. I realized that it was like chasing a carrot on a stick. The goal was right there in front of my nose. Running a successful gym is made up of so many other things than just making a living from it. Lifelong friendships are made, love is found, we were able to give people jobs, good experiences, help them lose weight, live a healthy lifestyle, and the list goes on. Creating jobs for other people is a huge thing to be able to do. One thing is to make money for myself, but I also want to make money and opportunities for others. People have walked through the door with no prior experience, and years later, teaching and training is all they do and care about. I had the opportunity to give a 13-year-old boy from my junior team his first job, and it was one of the proudest accomplishments of my life. How could I, for one second, wonder whether the gym was a success or not?